Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Are you a longtime listener of the Ruby Rogues podcast? Well, I have to say, we've got something special for you. Go sign up at rubyrogues.com/premium for $9 a month. You'll get access to ad-free episodes. That's right, ads-free. No ads. You'll also get access to a call every month where we discuss the upcoming podcast topics and allow you to suggest topics or guests for us so that we can go ahead and give you the show that you want. And finally, it's a terrific way to support the show. So go to rubyrogues.com/premium and sign up. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another My Ruby Story. This week, we're talking to Saverio Mirodi. Yeah. Saverio, do you want to say hello?
Hello, everybody.
This episode is sponsored by Sentry.io. Recently, I came across a great tool for tracking and monitoring problems in my apps. Then I asked them if they wanted to sponsor the show and allow me to share my experience with you. Sentry provides a terrific interface for keeping track of what's going on with my app. It also tracks releases so I can tell if what I deployed makes things better or worse. They give full stack traces and as much information as possible about the situation when the error occurred to help you track down the errors. Plus, one thing I love, you can customize the context provided by Sentry. So, if you're looking for specific information about the request, you can provide it. It automatically scrubs passwords and secure information, and you can customize the scrubbing as well. Finally, it has a user feedback system built in that you can use to get information from your users. Oh, and I also love that they support open source to the point where they actually open source Sentry if you want to self-host it. Use the code DevChat at Sentry.io to get 2 months free on Sentry's small plan. That's code DevChat at Sentry.io. Now, it's kind of funny. Are you from Italy, if I remember right?
Yes. I live in Germany, but I'm Italian.
Right. So you're the second Italian that I've spoken to today. And It's kind of funny. We did a React Native Radio episode earlier today. And neither Italian actually lives in Italy, which is kind of funny to me. But yeah.
Actually, part of my career was that I left Italy because at the time I was hoping to find a wider, let's say, technological landscape. So there may be a theme, you know?
Yep. Makes sense. And I lived in Italy for 2 years. So it's always fun for me to talk to Italians. Of course, usually when I wind up speaking to somebody from Italy, what happens is I'll start chatting with them in Italian and then they'll revert back to English before I do. So I don't get as much practice as I want. But anyway, so what part of Italy are you from? I'm just curious.
I'm Sicilian, from Sicily, northeast of Sicily. Yeah, I lived in a few cities, actually, also in the southeast, Sicily, southeast. I also lived in a few other cities. I lived in Verona in the northeast and Milan in the northwest.
Okay. Yeah, I lived in Verona. I also lived in Pordenone, which is way up in the northeast.
Yeah.
And then I lived down in Tuscany in Arezzo and over in Le Marche in Ancona.
Traveled a bit.
And I have some friends that live in Siracusa and a few other places in Italy. So
yes.
So yeah. So you're talking about Sicily, and yeah, I've known a few people that are either from there or live there. So yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we're here to kind of talk about you and your story here. Now, I also want to just throw out there for people who are wondering, you were on episode 381 of Ruby Rogues, and we talked about GUI development, and that was about a year ago. So before we dive too much into your backstory, I'm a little curious, over the last year, has anything changed for you, or are things mostly in the same place?
Well, it depends on what exactly, because, you know, that application that I wrote and the analysis that I did, it's pretty much the same as it was. I don't think there is anything that radically changed. Honestly, I felt that the Ruby GUI landscape is not really a wide solution to build GUIs, you know? So the original project that started everything is still there, and I use it daily, multiple times a day. But to be honest, in the future, I'm going to move it to Golang because I start to feel the limitations of, you know, the frameworks, Ruby itself. So that part, my work is the same as it was in this moment a year ago. Then there has been other things that changed considerably, most notably my contributions to open source, but that's the way more or less it was.
Right. Nice. Well, let's dive in and talk a little bit about your backstory and how you got into programming in Ruby. Let's start with how you got into programming.
That's interesting, yes, because programming in Ruby are two different things. I actually fell in love with programming when I was 7. As soon as I saw, you know, a Commodore 64, I just loved it. And I started, you know, to just open the manual and start to program. The time, it was more than 30 years ago. And at the time, there was the BASIC 2.0. So that's, you know, the amateur programming, but those are the roots. Then, unfortunately, my parents didn't care. And I was in a small town, so I couldn't follow up, you know, professionally with that. My professional follow-up has been around something like 16, 17 years later. And it's a bit of a curious story. I do my career to corruption, in a way, because after a few jobs, you know, related to IT, I started to work as a consultant system administrator for IBM. And there was a project in the Italian prefetture. Prefetture are just an administrative subdivision of the government. And there was this project where IBM sold servers to Italy, you know, big numbers of servers, I think hundreds. And our job as a consultant was to patch them. And that was it. So we worked for a couple of years, doing just half an hour of work every day, and then nothing in the rest of the day. And so I thought, well, okay, I want to do to learn something new, and I started to study Java. So, you know, I had more than 7 hours every day to study. I started studying Java, and then after 2 years, I could consider myself, you know, a junior. And so I changed job and I proposed myself as a Java programmer. And that was my start as a professional programmer. Ruby came later. At the time I was in London and I was looking for an interesting job. And there was a small startup at the time. They were on Rails, you know, that was something like 10 years ago where Rails was, you know, the new interesting framework.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the version probably at the time was something like 2.2 or something. And I was working for fun. I was writing a database in my spare time, so a database system. And they wanted somebody probably who, you know, was skilled with databases or, you know, had something for databases. I had it. And so I started to work as a Ruby junior with database skills.
Very cool. So it's interesting. I mean, you know, moving from Java to Ruby. I know a lot of people that made that transition. Of course, back when I got into Ruby, Rails was, I think it had just come to like 1.1, 1.1.2, I think was the version that I started on. And a lot of people were kind of bagging on Java because there were things that they liked about Ruby that I guess were a lot better. And I had done some Java in college, but, you know, not to the extent where I could, I guess, knowledgeably complain about Java.
But it's interesting. I don't have a negative opinion of Java. You know, they made lots of very interesting stuff. And, you know, there is always the debate on if, you know, static typing on large scale is the right choice or is a better suited choice, you know, than dynamic typing. So I was quite happy. It was just a project that wasn't interesting. Then of course Ruby opened an entire world for me. And nowadays I also tend to do a lot of scripting. Ruby is still a big part of it.
Nice. So how was it that you found Ruby?
How did I find it?
Yeah. How did somebody introduce you to it, or did you find it on the internet, or how did that go?
Oh, no. It was just, so at the time I was a Java programmer, but the company that hired me, they hired me as a Ruby, as a junior Ruby programmer. So their product, they were at the time, there were something like only two programmers. And then I was the third. And their product was in Ruby. It was in Ruby on Rails. So I started to study Ruby on the job.
A few years ago at a JavaScript conference, I was approached by Nader Dabit. And you might know him from the React Native Radio podcast. He's also a developer evangelist for Amazon. And when he came to me, we had a conversation about React Native. And the thing that I love about React Native is that it's approachable, it's web technology, and it's cross-platform. And it makes a lot of things really easy for developers to jump in and do interesting things on mobile with JavaScript. So we've had this show now running for several years, React Native Radio, where we interview people about the React Native ecosystem, some of the things that are coming out in React and how they affect mobile, and other options that you have for mobile development. So if you're doing mobile development, you're doing it in JavaScript, you're looking for a good option, or maybe you're just trying to stay current with React Native, then go check out React Native Radio at reactnativeradio.com. Right. That makes sense. So they were a Java company, but they hired you and then asked you to do Ruby.
No. Okay. Let me clarify. So I was in London and I was working in Java on a large scale application, large scale reporting application. Uh-huh. I left the job and I started to program in my own spare time. And then I searched for a new job, and there was this small company who had
A
Ruby on Rails product, and they hired me as a Ruby junior programmer, even if I had no prior knowledge, because they were interested mostly in my database skills.
Right. And so you didn't know Ruby before then?
No.
Interesting. So what was your experience then learning Ruby, and how long ago was this?
Oh, 10 years ago, more or less.
Okay.
Yeah, I still work for the same company. Well, it was...
Oh, wow.
It was interesting. You know, at the time, I didn't have much cognitions of programming languages. But, you know, all the pretty much usual things, usual considerations about languages apply. The thing that I think is the most important is that our boss had a background in agile programming. So we had a set of practices that made programming with Ruby solid. Because the biggest problem with, you know, dynamically typed languages is that if you don't have, I believe, a strong, very strong suite of tests, then, you know, things start to fall apart. So We had good practices. We had a very fluid language, you know, that is Ruby. We didn't have, you know, the scale where, you know, there was, Ruby is slow and so on. We didn't have this problem. It was also very, very fast, you know, to prototype stuff in Rails and Ruby. So it was fun and it was, you know, solid. It's not something where, you know, after 7, 8 years or whatever, you start to think, oh, that's garbage. I mean, it's inevitable, you know, that you find things that you don't like. But there is a difference between tangles and maintainable tangles and things that have been solidly programmed. So it's been a good experience, a very good experience from the beginning.
Nice. So I guess the next question I have is, how did you get into things like Shoes and Hackety Hack and Ruby Motion and all of that stuff, since your first Rails or Ruby job was doing Rails? And it sounds like that's probably what you spend most of your time on these days anyway.
Yeah, that's because actually, so I'm also, so right now I'm a tech lead and systems engineer, backend engineer, and I work a lot on tooling. As a backend person, I'm not very visual, you know, for example, I don't like using the mouse. Uh-huh. And so I'm a bit connected to, I would say that I'm a bit old school, you know. So if I have to do, if I write tooling, it's true that nowadays you do everything from a browser, so you write in JavaScript with a web interface. But my instinct is to write a GUI, you know, if it's small and I have to do something like a GUI. So this is why. It's because I'm not very close to the Visual part to browsers and so on. So still my first, you know, connection is to GUI frameworks. And that's why, for example, my project was just very simple. I just need something where I type a hotkey and then I type some name and then I want to see all of my files in my operating system, in my disks. And for me, the most immediate way of doing things was just by using a GUI framework, not, you know, web browsers and so on.
Right.
But minimal solutions, so Ruby provided this.
Very cool. And yeah, I'm still a little curious how you got into that particular angle of things, though. Was it just, you know, kind of a holdover from Java where it was, you know what, I want to build the GUI kind of as a native GUI instead of a web GUI?
It's just, you know, my angle is just that I start... I never personally got into this browser-centered way of doing things. And I still, you know, there is, for example, what is it? You know, there is Visual Code, I think. You know, things that are built on layers that are very high level. I'm not too much into that. So right. I prefer to write something that it's a bit closer to the metal in a way, which I know is right. Old-fashioned. It's old school, and I wouldn't do it for big projects, okay? But still, I see things independent from a browser. I personally see, you know, instinctively, the browser as a middle layer that I personally don't need. Again, right. This is also because I work a lot on tools. Sometimes tools are just throwaways. They're small. Maybe the layer, the user frame, the front, front end is not so important. So I don't think instinctively of the middle layer that is the browser.
Right. Makes sense. So what are you working on these days?
Well, I still work. So that's interesting because I still work with my company, or, you know, we have our product that is, you know, the market leader in their segment in Ireland, the UK. Now, the thing is that I started to look for other work jobs around a year ago, and I got, you know, into interviews with GitLab and GitHub. They rejected me, but my boss made me an interesting offer, giving me the opportunity to work paid for up to 40% of the time on whatever I want. This includes any type of open source or studying or anything I want, essentially. So aside the work that I do, I have lots of time to work on everything I want on open source. So I had lots of, you know, not big, but lots of small contribution, very different from each other. So this year has been very interesting in, you know, getting in touch with open source in general. So this for me has been a very interesting experience that I still do.
Nice. So one other thing I'm curious about, what does a day for you look like? Like you get up in the morning, you know, you brush your teeth or whatever, and then what happens?
It happens is that I log in, and in the morning we have this agreement, you know. So I've been promoted to tech lead, and because, you know, the systems team needed, you know, a direction that my CEO couldn't, you know, give anymore due to the fact that we're growing. So in the morning, mostly I work on coordination with my team. So I review the PRs. So we follow, you know, quite strict, let's say, GitHub style workflow. So there are, you know, I write issues or somebody else has written them, and we discuss them. Then, of course, we have the stand-up. I review the PRs. I open PRs. In the morning, I do the collaborative part of my job. Then, essentially, generally for lunchtime, I disconnect. And then I work alone on everything. I may work on something that is related to work, or I may study, or I may pick up, you know, a task from an open source job, an open source project, an issue, or generally stuff with issue always, even when I write a PR. But that's pretty much, so it's very varied. You know, it may happen that I just study for the entire afternoon or write tooling for work. It's it depends, but there is this division, you know, morning, work and team, and then open source or studies disconnected in the afternoon.
Very cool. And I'm curious too, because a lot of times we highlight, okay, this is what it's like for Saverio at work, and this is what it's like, you know, to work on the things that he does or what he's interested in. But we don't really get the full picture of who you are. And so I'm a little curious too. I mean, outside of programming and work, what do you like to do? What do you spend your time on? You know, who do you live with? What kind of lifestyle do you live? Yeah. How's your German if you're Italian living in Germany?
Okay, well, lots of things. I have to say that actually I love programming and studying also outside of work. Okay, it's not work, but for me it's a blur. So I still program and study outside. If you exclude that though, I do swing dance and bouldering. Which is bouldering. I do lots of sport actually, and bouldering has been big for me in the last years. It's a
bouldering.
Yes, it's a variety. Let's call it of climbing. Instead of doing with a rope up to 15 meters or whatever, you do it without a rope up to 3 or 4 meters with big mattresses. So you're free to go up and then fall without injuring yourself. It's more intense. It's a bit compared to sports climbing. It's a bit like saying, 100 meters compared to a marathon. You know, it's intense, it's quick. And that's the nature of it. And then I also do swing dance. Those are my two activities. Then I also have a daughter, so I spend time with my daughter and then go out. Those are my main things in my life. I'm particularly in love with Germany because I like the Northern European culture, and I find a very good compromise here in Germany between the South and the North. For me, there is a very visible gradient, let's call it, and this is kind of in the middle. It's towards Northern, and I love it, but it has a bit of Southern. So I'm happy here. My German is terrible. I can use it. But it's self-taught, and it just works. I never like to do courses for learning something that I can learn on a book. So right. It's it's usable.
Nice. Very cool. One of my favorite communities to get involved with these days is the Angular community. There are so many great people there. We've had a lot of them on Adventures in Angular over the last several years. And I really wanted to just highlight people and give you a chance to get to know the flavor and the feel of being around some of these awesome people. We've talked to people on the Angular Core team. We've talked to people who have organized the conferences. We've talked to some of the co-hosts that I've had on Adventures in Angular. Nowadays, Aaron Frost is running the show and he's doing the same thing. Typically, he's been doing it at conferences lately, which is a lot of fun. But you get to hear what these people are about and why they care and how they get involved with other people in the Angular community. So if you're looking for that connection in the Angular community and a way to really understand the people who are involved in the Angular community, then go check out My Angular Story. You can find it at myangularstory.com. Is there anything else that people should know about you as far as what you like or what you, any opinions you have on how software is done or things like that?
Yeah, well, actually talking about open source, I have a very... I had bad and good experiences. My first, it's kind of commonplace to say, let's work on Rails. Then I found out that it's a terrible idea. So here's where I can give an opinion, which is I have a very opinionated one. And I think that I would advise people that want to work on open source to stay far from Rails, because it suffers from the it's difficult to manage an open source project. And I think it's very much, if you want to have a community, it's very much like training people at work, it takes effort. And I don't see this as Rails. There are something like 500-600, I think, PRs open. And what are they doing? They're not closed, they're not worked on. So that's for me, it's not a welcoming way of working on a project. I don't doubt that that there are great, developers that work on that, and they do things. But if you take instead something like GitLab, for example, GitLab is great. They take community work really seriously. They have people who, you know, guides people. They have programs for making, you know, the community work on things. Their interviews are based on actually, you know, taking an issue from the issue tracker and working on it. And this is wonderful. You know, they say, people like to think that hiring is broken, but some companies do it well, and I think GitLab does. There are many things. I mean, I work on other things. If somebody really wants something high profile, of course, they can GitLab. Bundler does it okay as well. They follow people. Diaspora, they're also responsive, you know. Lately, I've been working on, I work on any language, you know. Terraform, everybody knows Terraform in the system. And that's a really great, again, project to work on. They're very responsive and, you know, paradoxically, I'm happy when people close as a PR because it means that they care. You know, I prefer somebody who closes a PR and say, sorry, this is wrong, which happened to me, rather than leaving my PR open for 6 months without knowing what's happening. So those are projects, you know, that they're a good start for people who want to, you know, dip their feet into open source, I think.
Nice. Yeah, that makes sense. And yeah, you're right about Rails. There's a lot going on there as opposed to some of these other projects where you're kind of working at a higher level, right? Because all of the Rails extractions are already there. You're not working on them. You're working with them. And then, yeah, the other thing is depending on what the submission is, yeah, it makes sense that it's going to be something that is, I guess, a little bit more straightforward as far as what you're trying to add to the project. And yeah, hopefully people are responsive because, yeah, I'm not good at that either sometimes with some of the gems that I've put out there. I get busy and then I come back and I'm like, oh, there's a pull request that's been sitting here for 6 months.
Yeah, the paradox is that, at least personally, I personally would prefer close it because at least it's honest, you know? It's the paradox of thinking that you can hurt somebody if you close their PR. But in reality, it's the lesser evil of, you know, leaving somebody hanging for a year, 2 years. I mean, again, on Rails, there are PRs that are years and years old. And I pick Rails just because for me it was the glaring example. But of course, there are other PRs. Terraform is great, but then the Terraform plugins are different. And it seems that they are handled by different maintainers. And I think then it happens again. You know, you open a PR. That a PR that follows an issue, you know, so it's not something that, you know, I just woke up one day and just decided to do. And then they hang for months and months. So I think this is something that maintainers should, you know, take into account. If you hurt somebody by closing a PR, it's okay. I think it's fine to you know, make explicit that you don't have the time and the quantity, you know, that you just can't work on it.
Yep. Makes sense. Cool. Well, let's go ahead and move into picks. And picks are just things that you want to shout out about, just like on Ruby Rogues. Do you have some things that you want to shout out about on the show?
Well, my picks were actually the open source projects, you know? So it's for programmers, you know? So to recap, my picks are if you want to program in Ruby, just go for GitLab. If you want to program in Golang, go for Terraform. Yeah, and those are my projects. Another friend of mine is actually working on a programming language called Gobi. Now, I wouldn't, I don't express whether it's worth or not, but if you need to write an interpreter and compiler in Golang, it's actually lots of fun. So that's another pick of mine.
Nice. I'm trying to think of what I should pick. I mean, I've been reading a few books lately and working on some things. One of them is a book called Superfans. It's by Pat Flynn. If you listen to the Smart Passive Income podcast, which is a podcast about basically running a business online or making money online, it just talks about how to move people up the ladder of, you know, becoming bigger and bigger fans of what you're doing. And we definitely have some people that are super fans of what we're doing at devchat.tv. And it's always fun to talk to those folks and just find out how we've really had an impact on them. If you'd like to reach out and let me know how DevChat's impacted you, be that through Ruby Rogues or My Ruby Story or maybe one of our other shows, go ahead and do that. You can do that through devchat.tv/15 minutes. That's 15 minutes. And yeah, let me know. I'm also toying with the idea of the possibility of having guest hosts from the wider community out there come onto some of the shows. So if you're a fan of the show and you like to be a guest host, then email me and let me know and we'll see if we can have you on one of the shows. Even if you're not sort of the expert on whatever topic we're talking about, it'd be fun just to have you on the show just to see what you think. So, you know, you can chime in and ask questions of our guest and things like that. We also talked to DHH, 2 weeks ago? And so that episode should be coming out pretty darn soon and that'll be fun. So that's Super Fans by Pat Flynn. I went to the launch party for that, which was fun. At Podcast Movement, and then got Pat to sign the book. So I'm pretty bullish on that. And then I guess another pick that I have, so I've been running, I'm going to be running a marathon in about 5 weeks. And it's funny because earlier in life, I hated running. I was on the swim team, and when our coach would make us get out of the water and go run, oh, I hated that. But now I'm really loving it. I love getting out there and just going for, you know, I think the longest run I've done so far is 12 miles. And I just, you know, I just love doing it. 12 miles is about, 20 kilometers? So anyway, really, really just enjoying that a lot. One thing I figured out, though, is that friction is not your friend when it comes to your skin. So, you know, I'd be running and my shorts would actually rub against my legs. And when you're running for that long, it would rub enough to actually rub it raw. And so it'd start to sting and hurt. And the other thing is the shorts I was running in actually, they had like 2 or 3 layers to them. And so they would soak up, you know, sweat and humidity from the air and get wet and then get heavy. And that made it harder to run. It also made the rubbing worse. And so I went online and I found some sort of single layer fast drying shorts on Amazon. It's also starting to get cold here in the mornings. Like some mornings it's 60 degrees or lower, which is kind of cool. And you know, if you're running a few miles, it's not a big deal. But if you're going to be out there for an hour and a half or so, I found that I'd get home and I had trouble moving my hands. And so I picked up some gloves that have the capacitive touch in the fingertips so that I can use my phone while I'm running so I can switch songs and typically I'm listening to podcasts or audiobooks, but you know, so I can control that. And that's been really great. And then I also picked up some long sleeve shirts that, you know, will hold in a little bit of warmth, but won't make me hot. And so, anyway, I've picked up a bit of running gear while I've been out. So, I'll put links to all that stuff in the show notes as well. And, running has really been a good thing for me. And I've been a little concerned about my health anyway. I'm diabetic. I had some health problems at the beginning of the year related to that. And things are a lot better now. So I'll shout out about that. I guess the last question I have, Saverio, is if people want to find you online, where do they go?
GitHub.com/SaverioMiroti. That's where everything is there. Because, for example, I also have a blog. But the blog is based, you know, on the GitHub blog, okay. You know, pages. So saveriomiroti.github.io. I just do everything. My presence is all open source.
Okay.
So just saveriomiroti and GitHub will tell everything that I have to tell.
Sounds good. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and wrap this up. Thanks again for coming.
Thank you.
And we'll be back next week.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.